Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Elaine from Great Facts Meeting in Neptune, New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. My name's Elaine, and I am an alcoholic for sure. My sobriety date is September 23rd, 2002, so I just celebrated 10 years of continuous sobriety. And I'd like to thank Sarah for inviting me here. It's an honor to go to an AA meeting and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'd like to thank my friend Gail for taking the ride with me all the way from down the Jersey Shore. So we always have fun in the car ride here. But so I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor other women. You know, I think that's really important for us to take somebody by the hand and show them the way out of the hole, you know, that we were once in. You know, I still can't believe I'm sober 10 years. I couldn't stop drinking for 10 minutes, 10 days, 10 years is like blows me away. But let me just tell you a little bit about what it was like. You know, I grew up, I was the youngest of two. I grew up in Livingston, New Jersey. I had a grandfather that had died of this disease before I was even born. I never even knew him. And my brother suffers from alcoholism, too. I look at it as a blessing. I got to change the course of my life through this program. And I remember when we were kids, they used to have bottled soda delivered to your house. It was called Brookdale soda. I don't know if any of the older people had it. And we always used to take the grape soda, and we'd get the shot glasses at my grandmother's house, and we'd pour ourselves shots, even as little kids. So, you know, we were truly destined to sit in these rooms, you know, for sure. But life was pretty normal for the most part, up until I think I was in third grade. Things would start changing dramatically in my life. I felt loved and cared for up until that point. And things just in the home started to get ugly. My parents started fighting. And I was about 10 years old when my first traumatic experience happened, which was my mother tried to commit suicide and I found her. My life was completely turned upside down. I couldn't understand it. Well, at first when it happened, I didn't know what was going on until I went into the bathroom and I found the note. And then it was like, wait, what? You know, my mother's trying to check out, you know, what's the matter with me? So she made it. She was in a coma for a while, but she pulled through. And I remember at that point in time, that's when the chameleon of me, you know, came out. I would be whatever she needed me to be, whatever she wanted me to be. And that kind of went on for anybody, you know. It was like I tried to be something I was not all the time, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. So things got progressively worse in the household. One night my mother and I came home and my father and my brother were gone. They took the dog and they were gone, and I wouldn't see my brother for 15 years and I wouldn't see my father for 20. So again, there was a lot of abandonment, a lot of, you know, dysfunction in the household. And there was this little girl inside of me saying, what's the matter with me? What's the matter with me? There's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with me. People keep leaving me. So I became the people pleaser, extraordinaire. You know, I wanted everybody to like me. I made my life, you know, works to have people like me. I tried to be everything I could be for those around me, especially my mother, because I didn't want her to do that again, you know, especially with my father gone. And I guess I was in junior high. First year of junior high was the first time I started dabbling with alcohol. And, you know, back in the day, you know, doing some other substances too. But alcohol was my love. I mean, it turned me into something that I felt so good about. You know, I felt it let me be bold. You know, it let me be bold, and I could be anything, you know, when I digested, you know, in alcohol. I felt like another person. And I made it my business every weekend, you know, of course, to drink. And then, you know, then we'd, the kids in the woods, we'd be smoking cigarettes, and whoever could cop whatever out of their parents' liquor cabinets, you know, I'd start drinking before school and whatnot, and started getting into trouble. I remember in home economics class, we made pizza one day, and we used a little bit of half of something that we smoked in the morning to put on the pizza, and I remember everybody saying, boy, it really smells like pot in here. So we really had a good time. And I really scraped by in school. I was never like the A student. You know, I really just kind of snuck by the skin of my teeth. My brother was the one who always excelled at academics. So, you know, my mom remarried, and, you know, we moved in with my new dad, and I was kind of on my own. You know, I got to do whatever I wanted. My mother didn't really care, you know, so I got to run. I got to run and do what I wanted to do. They'd be in bed by the time I got home, whatever time that was, and that was pretty cool to me back then. You know, I felt like I was a grown-up, you know, and I had a horse at that time, and most of my friends, you know, we would hang out at the stables after school, and we'd drink, and we'd carry on, and that's all I did. It's all I wanted to do was drink, because it turned me into something I wasn't. You know, I was prettier, funnier, happier. And I found myself graduating from high school by the skin of my teeth. And I guess about 3 months later, I found myself pregnant. I'd been dating my childhood sweetheart, and we decided that we would get married. I was 18, and he was my drinking buddy. You know, I didn't drink during that pregnancy. I was really, really good. I wanted to prove to everybody that, you know, I could do this. You know, I was going to be a good mom, and I didn't drink. But, you know, as soon as she was out, bring me some wine. I'd love to have some wine, you know. So right out the get-go, I couldn't wait to start drinking again. And, you know, the marriage wasn't the best. We were young. We didn't know, although we thought we knew everything at the time. We really had no business, you know, getting married. I did have two more children. Second child, I didn't drink. The third child, I drank when I was pregnant. I couldn't, you know, my progression was getting worse, and I couldn't, not that I, you know, I drank wine. I didn't drink the hard stuff, and, you know, each time the child was born, I was definitely out ready to get a party on. And I remember, you know, thinking, my father-in-law at the time was an alcoholic, and, you know, I knew I drank a lot, but I never compared myself. I never thought I was an alcoholic because I compared myself to him. He was the kind of drunk, he was a binge drinker. Once he started, he didn't stop. He'd end up in the hospital getting, you know, cleaned out, you know. We took him in a couple times because my mother-in-law had it, and, you know, I wasn't that. I couldn't be an alcoholic, you know. I didn't look like him. So our marriage, you know, deteriorated. My husband wasn't home a lot. And, you know, one night something happened in my home. My husband wasn't home, and I had a friend come over, and things kind of progressed in a direction I didn't want it to. And you know, those moments of clarity, I woke up before anything really bad happened. And that was what I needed. That was what I needed to really take a look at it. I was totally, I mean, how I woke up from that, the amount of alcohol that I ingested that night, I have no idea. But, you know, I did. And that was the thing that got me into AA. And this was in 1989. So you can see, I, you know, 10 years, you can do the math. So I went to AA the next day. It scared the crap out of me. You know, I was starting to black out, but this, you know, this was really something that really was like morally, you know, I was on the edge of doing something really morally wrong. And I went to AA, and I really liked it. Everybody here made me feel welcome. You know, I wasn't quite convinced I was an alcoholic, but I felt good here. And I went to AA for a while, and I got a sponsor because people kept telling me that's what I needed to do. So I got a sponsor, and I got this cute little old lady who went through the steps by the 12 and 12. And she took me through the 12 and 12, the best that, you know, the way she learned how. And my fourth step was a saga. It was just so, you know, that's the way she did it. You write this life story. And, you know, I really made a couple amends, you know, kind of half-assed it. I just really did not take my sobriety seriously. I followed directions. I'm a people pleaser, you see. So, you know, I wanted to please my sponsor. I wanted to look like I was doing the deal, you know. And my husband didn't like the new me. I was his drinking buddy. And now here I had a say in things. I had an opinion. I would, you know, and our marriage was going south, and we decided to end the marriage. So now AA became a hotbed for me to find a new husband. So that was my next mission. You know, that was my next mission, was to find my next victim, really, because I was a no solution whatsoever. I was just some crazy woman, you know, running around AA looking for something to make her feel good, because I wasn't working the steps like they're outlined in the big book like I do today. You know, and I truly, truly, that was it. That was my mission. And when my oldest daughter graduated from high school, I decided it would be a good idea to have a drink of wine. Nobody would know. It'd be okay. You know what? Maybe it was my childhood that made me drink. I had a really crappy childhood. And maybe it was my ex-husband that made me drink, because, you know, he was really a jerk to me, you know. So my disease came back to tell me I didn't have a disease. And I picked up the drink. And I watched it for a while. You know, I played it cool. I didn't want anybody to know. You know, I was hiding out. And before this, I forgot to mention that my sponsor moved away, and I never got a new one. And then one of my best friends in AA moved away, and I started to move away from AA. I was like, oh, you know, this isn't working for me. You know, I wasn't working at all. So, yeah, here I am, hiding out, drinking, doing what made me feel good. And I'm like, my best friend, you know, is back. And it didn't take long. It didn't take long for it to be a daily thing. I remember going to work in the morning thinking, all right, where am I going to stop? Where am I going to stop on the way? Where did I go yesterday so that they don't think I'm an alcoholic, you know? And I remember punishing myself and going to the gym, like it's 6 in the morning, I'm sure. I reeked of alcohol. You know, I hated myself. And I'm going to do this, and, you know, I can do this. I can drink, and I can go work out. It's just craziness. And both of my daughters at this point in time had, you know, gone to college and were out of the house, and it was my son that was home with me and really saw the ugliness of the progression of this disease, and really feel badly for him. So grateful for this program to show me a way, you know, to make amends and to have a living amends today with him. So I tried stopping a few times over the years. I went out for a drink one night, and I came back 7 years later. By the grace of God, I came back, and I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't, you know, have a car accident. Well, I did, but it was just my car. I spun out on the way home one night and popped both tires and thought it was okay. I was going to be able to drive home. And ironically, I parked in front of a liquor store and called my next-door neighbor, and he came and got me. But I just cannot believe, you know, how lucky I am to have made it back. And it wasn't an easy coming back. You know, I had a lot of pride. You know, I didn't want to, you know, I was afraid of what you all were going to think of me. And, you know, God, you know, she was out for so long or whatever. You know, my ego was just, like, so great. My pride was so great. So I went to moderation management meetings instead. That didn't work out too well either. If you're a real alcoholic, I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're a joke. If you're a real alcoholic, you know, it didn't work for me either. So last resort was I was going to kill myself drinking because I was bloated. I was like, you know, 35 pounds heavier than I am now. I was a mess. I didn't eat so I could drink, you know. Drinking was my life. Again. And I don't know how I held down a job. I remember having a good sniffer for when I was getting in trouble, you know. I wasn't that accurate on the job, as you can well imagine. And at that time, I was an executive assistant for a vice president, and errors didn't go over too well. And I would know when he was, like, getting pissed off at me, and I'd go to HR and, like, cry and, you know, put on this show of, you know, oh, there's some terrible things going on at home or whatever. Like, I was manipulating my life, trying to make things happen, you know, keep myself a job. You know, I needed to have a job, raising three kids on my own, you know. So I finally realized that I needed you guys, you know. I finally realized that that was what I needed. And I came in February of 2002. It was the night after my son's 21st birthday, my baby. And I went and bought him his first legal drink, bought him the second legal drink, and then I went out with a friend so I could drink and do other things that I wanted to do and not have to have my son see me, you know, in that condition. And I remember tearing it up pretty good that night. And it was about 4 in the morning. And I was sitting on my bathroom floor crying and saying to my friend, who is just like me, that I have to go back to AA. And she said, okay, we'll go tomorrow. And I did. I did. I made her go with me. And I went into the Denville Drop-In Center in Denville, New Jersey. And I you know, raised my hand and said, I'm coming back. You know, 7 years later, I'm coming back. And everybody opened their arms to me, and I felt that peace and comfort that I did the first time. I didn't think I'd get it right away, but I did. So, you know, I came around, and I'm still kind of checking out the guys, you know, and still looking for the wrong thing. And 8 months into my sobriety, I feel like drinking again. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I can't do this. I know I'm going to die if I go back. If I go back out, I'm never going to make it back. What am I going to do? And there was the woman in the room who was celebrating. And she was known as this really hard, you know, person, kind of like a big book, Gestapo, they called her, and whatever. And I knew if I asked her to be my sponsor, my life was going to change, you know. I was going to lose control, you know. So God nudged me. And after that meeting, I asked her to be my sponsor. And she said yes. And we sat at her kitchen table once a week and went through the big book. And I was amazed. You know, when I got to my fourth step, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe who I was. I just thought I was this nice little girl who drank too much. You know, I got to see what a manipulator, a liar, how dishonest I'd been through my whole life. I had no clue. You know, and what freedom that was, you know, to see, to be awake and aware, you know, and, you know, to go through the rest of the steps to see, you know, how I can change. And it was an amazing experience for me. Things with her didn't work out. She kind of went into a dark place, and I had found myself, actually, I didn't go through all the steps with her. I found myself in a scary place. You know, I had all this stuff, and I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I was that donut, you know, that hole in the donut. Like, oh, my God, here I am with all this, and who am I, what am I, and stuff. And then I found someone else to take me through the work and help me to really see who God would have me be. And it was the first time I went to an AA weekend-long retreat, and I heard Peter Marinelli speak for the first time. And I was on fire with the thought of having a spiritual experience through the steps. I hadn't really had one before. Oh, and I just want to digress a little bit. So, you know, I came in February, and I was telling you at the beginning of the meeting, I celebrate in September. I did a little marijuana maintenance when I was in the program, and I thought that was okay. And then I really didn't think it was okay, but I was still living in delusion. And so in September, I was working with Lena, and had no intention of telling her. I was going to keep that. And when she came down to sit with me It came out. God shook the truth out of me, you know, and we really have to be honest, you know. Our foundation has to be strong, and it was just so freeing to get that out there and to start my date over and say, yeah, September 23rd, 2002 is the day I decided to put everything down and really be honest with this program. So, so I worked the steps with Lena, and I started delving into spiritual matters too. You know, trying different things on. I did start sponsoring women. My first six all went back out, and I'm like, see, there's something wrong with me. You know, my sponsor kept going, get another one, fish her out. Go on, just keep fishing her out, fishing them out. And so I would do that. You know, I kept at it. And I lost my train of thought there. Spiritual. Yes, thank you, Sarah. And so I started delving in different. I started watching Joyce Myers in the morning, and one of my friends who was in the program was telling me about this study that she would go to, and it was a bunch of ladies, like six late ladies, and they'd meet in the back of a beauty parlor after it closed. It reminded me of Steel Magnolias. I don't know if any of you have seen that movie. So, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'm trying to be open to spiritual things, you know, let's give it a go, you know. So, and it turned out to be okay. You know, at first I was a little intimidated. They held hands and they prayed, and, you know, and the woman that ran this thing was a Jew for Jesus. I'd never heard of one of them either. It's a Jewish woman who believes in Jesus and whatever. So it was quite an interesting meeting. But what it did for me, it set me my feet on a path that was going somewhere. In addition to the big book, you know, we're asked to do spiritual, to seek spiritually, whatever it is. And that really did set me into an arena that really fills my heart, you know, and brings joy. You know, I learned how to meditate through these women. You know, one of the things that scared me the most was the thought of sitting still for a while. I remember back in the 70s trying to do transcendental meditation, and that didn't work out too well because I was still, you know, the squirrel in the wheel, you know. Then I moved down the shore, and I was still using Lena as a sponsor, and it was tough because I couldn't be accountable, you know. I started watching myself. It's amazing how sick my mind is, you know. I could see myself, you know, kind of backing off and not, oh, I'm not fitting in over here and people aren't warming up to me over here and blah, blah, blah. And I just, I found another sponsor, and I just kept going and trying to find my fellowship, you know, that spoke to me. You know, and going through the work again was just a blessing. You know, my sponsor is Diane S., and I think she might have come here to speak to you guys when it was out on the lawn. She just had surgery today on her knee, so if you think about her in your prayer tonight, that'd be great. She texted me before I got into the meeting, and she said everything went well, which I knew it would. Going through the steps the first time, you know, making the amends to my children for the harm I did when I was out there doing my crazy, you know, during my crazy period, was overwhelming. And it's funny because the one child, because I have two girls and a boy, and the one that I thought I would get off the easiest was the one that was the hardest, you know, and I was like, whoa, you know, and I sat there and I listened. I caused a lot of harm. I was not the mother I wanted to be, you know. I kept pretending. I lived in a life of delusion where I thought I was still a good mother even though I drank. I wasn't. I was not there. You know, my ideas of what was important to me were a lot different than what I was showing up as this mother. So that was just an amazing experience for me. So when I came back this time, you know, I admitted I was No, I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. I knew it. I saw it a few times. You know, I tried to make it back to the rooms a few times. I saw what alcohol, you know, how alcohol would have its way with me. And I had no power over it. So I was pretty clear on that one, you know. Came to believe in a power greater than myself, you know, that could restore me to sanity. I always believed in a power greater than myself. I remember as a child when my parents were going through their crazy stage, you know, when they were fighting in the house and whatnot, I was the little girl who walked to church by myself. And I remember sitting in at a weeping willow in the library of the Livingston Library, and I'd sit up there and I'd cry and I'd talk to God, you know, because I knew He was listening. And when I came back here, you know, I started to feel that relationship again. You know, I started to really feel that God was in my life, that He was here for me, you know, and wanted only the best for me. And I remember having a bad attitude about God before I went to that one retreat. And I remember being at a meeting, and Howard G., who's from the Berkeley Heights group, saying to me, he says, if you don't like your conception of God, you can change it. You know, so one of the things that I did during my drinking was I made God a bad person, you know, a bad being. And when I finally got to see that I can change my conception of God, it made it much easier for me to pray to that God. So today my God is a loving, caring friend, you know, He wants the best for me. He's my biggest fan. You know, I'm doing I invite women to my home every Wednesday to do some spiritual growth, and we're doing The Purpose-Driven Life and by Rick Warren, which is a really good book. And, you know, it just drives home the fact that, you know, I'm here for a reason. You know, right now, that reason is to be here speaking to you, to help other women in this program, you know, to help them find a way to a power greater than themselves that will restore them to sanity, too. I didn't know how crazy I was. I had no idea how crazy I was. I didn't know until I started doing this work, you know. And most of it was a life of delusion. You know, I really just had been deluding myself for so long and trying to pretend I was something I wasn't, but I didn't know how crazy I was. Thank God for this program. So made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So I remember the day that it went from head to heart. You know, I was working with Lena at the time. And one of the things she always told me is look for God in everything. So I started looking for God in everything. I'd look for God in the sunset. I'd look for God in people's eyes. I remember I was going to the Catholic Church at that time, and I was going up for communion. And I remember looking at the people in their eyes when I was going for communion. And I just started to cry because I could really feel, you know, God's love in them too. And I had a spiritual experience in church. And I've had a few spiritual experiences, even my first time in the program, you know, which you would have thought would have been enough to keep me, you know, keep me here, but it wasn't. You know what happens, our ego regenerates and our disease comes back. And so when it went to head to heart, you know, my life really, really took on new meaning. I started to see Him everywhere. God was right there, you know, is right here all the time. And to grow spiritually, you know, the different tools that I've been using over the years, from sitting in that beauty parlor to, you know, sitting around my dining room table now, have really been really great additions to my spiritual toolkit. And I was, you know, I made a searching and fearless moral inventory again, you know. A lot of the character defects that I had when I first came in are gone. Some of them are still there. Playing God is one of them. You think you don't, but you do. You know, I just couldn't believe it. Again, I'm playing God. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, thank God for great sponsorship that teach us, to show us, you know, yeah, you are. You are doing it again. And to be able to make these amends. And God, you know, knew I wasn't strong enough to see some of the things that I did when I, you know, when I first came in. So, you know, I got to see some of the other harms that I caused, and I was able to make other amends to, you know, people, you know. And I love doing fifth steps with my sponsees. You know, it just reminds me of me, and, you know, I get to see myself in them, and I get to say, oh, yeah, I'm still doing that. I better, you know, raise the bar on this one for myself. you know, and I am ready to have God remove these. You know, every morning I start out my morning, you know, dear God, you know, please direct my thinking today. You know, I'm yours, you know, do with me what you will. And I trust, you know, today with how my life unfolds. You know, before I used to have to control everything. I had to know exactly this. I had to figure everything out. And, you know, I tell my sponsees, you know, to me today, my life is like I'm this little leaf in a stream. You know, and of course there's footwork that has to be done. I'm not talking that, you know, I'm leaving everything to, you know, chance or, you know, it's just that I now don't have that fear that I used to wake up with. You know, I trust that God's going to take me where I need to be today. You know, and I humbly asked him to remove them. We had my husband's birthday was this weekend, and we had 15 people, his cousins from Florida. And they all drink, and we had them at my house. And I got to be, you know, a gracious host. And I got to be somebody who didn't judge them. I was able to just be there and enjoy their company and laugh at their stories and not be like, you know, we're all a bunch of alcoholics, you know. No, it wasn't that at all. You know, it was really great. I prayed before they came. I asked God to be with me, and He showed up. He always does, you know. So, you know, I made the list this time around, and some of my amends, you know, were graveside. My parents, I had two sets of parents, and they all died before I really got this program. My dad, we got back together. Like I said, we were separated for 20 years. I had done something called the Landmark Forum, and it was a weekend-long thing. And it teaches you that if you don't complete your relationships, you're doomed to repeat that pattern. So I knew I had, you know, it was my goal to, you know, seek out my dad after 20 years and see, you know, get this thing going. And, you know, at first he was like, you know, what do you want? You know, he was remarried. His wife was like, what does she want? You know, but they did meet me, and I got to be in a relationship with my dad for about 2.5 years, and then he died of a heart attack. But my living amends was to take care of his wife. She had never had children, and she became very ill with cancer, and I got to be there for her. I got to help her get her house ready to sell. I got her to an assisted living. And then at the end, I got to be there on her deathbed. And it was amazing. You know, I got the call from the nursing home where she ended up at the end saying that it was time. And when I got there, she was very agitated. And the hospice lady was there, and she said, why don't you get her to lay in the bed? So she laid down, and she said, hop in bed with her. And as soon as I held her, her whole body relaxed, and it was really amazing. And she started staring up at the ceiling, and I just started talking to her, and I was like, do you see Daddy, and, you know, whatever, and do you see Jesus? And I said, well, I think it's time for you to go. And she died in my arms, and it was the most beautiful feeling, because I felt like I handed her off to God, you know, and it was amazing. It was the most, and some people I tell, they're like, oh my God, really? And it was just beautiful. I get goosebumps every time I get to tell. So I handed my stepmother off to my dad and to her father in heaven. You know, it was just beautiful experience for me. So, you know, my amends were, that was probably the most powerful amends to my dad, and he wasn't even alive for it, but he saw, you know. So I continue to take personal inventory, you know, every night. You know, my sponsor's on me. How's that 10th step going at night? Going good. Sometimes it doesn't go good. Sometimes I, you know, I fall short of the mark. But for the most part, I want to show up in a way that God wants me to show up today. And in the morning, like I said, I wake up and start my day. Okay, I fell short here yesterday. Help me. Help me to be, you know, better in this area. Show me what you would have me be in this area. And prayer and meditation. You know, meditation, like I said, was not easy coming to me. But today it's a beautiful experience, you know. it takes me out of me. I get to spend time with God and away from the rat race, away from the craziness in my head. You know, I get to spend time with God alone. And like any other relationship, you know, if you want to have a relationship with your friends or boyfriend, husband, you got to spend time with them. And that's what, you know, my sponsor told me. You have to spend time with God if you want a relationship. You know, for a while there, it was half measuring it, even in my spiritual life. And once that changed, once that fire got lit, you know, inside of me, because God really is, deep down inside each and every one of us is God, is the essence of God, you know, then I realized that, you know, I am God's beautiful child, carrying the message of AA to other people, you know. And I've had several spiritual experiences. Another one of that I had was when I was on a retreat in a convent, and I was in a really dark spot in my life. It was actually the first time I came into the program, and I was going through my divorce. And I remember kneeling on the kneeler, and I heard this, and I started seeing like a slideshow in my head of good times in my life, bad times in my life. And I heard this voice, and I was there, and I was there, and I was there. You know, and as powerful as that was, it wasn't enough to keep me sober. Because I can't stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. I can't stay sober on yesterday's spirituality. So I constantly have to grow. And I practice these principles to the best of my ability every day. You know, I'm currently not working, but I do volunteer. That time of my life when I was there with my stepmother prompted me to get involved with hospice. So I volunteer for hospice, and I go visit elderly women once a week. And, you know, they don't remember who I am from one week to the next, but that's okay, you know. I'm there just to bring light and love in their life, you know, and out of this dismal existence of being in pain and nobody coming to visit them. And that's carrying the message, too. You know, I get to be of service to people in AA and outside of AA. I got married. I did find my next victim, although I was sober at the time. So, you know, he'll have 9 years sobriety in April. And we have a great life. You know, he's a good man, and he doesn't do AA like I do. And I was told I have to keep stop looking over the fence and keep your eyes on your own sobriety. And at first that was really tough, because he should do it the way I do it. And that was a struggle, because, you know, I like to play God. But today I don't. Completely stay out of it. And, you know, I trust my God today, you know. And I believe we're all on spiritual paths, and everyone's at a different level on their journey. And he's on his, and I'm on mine. And those three beautiful children that I raised in a crazy drunken household, you know, all grown. My oldest is just got married in July. And I got a call from her the other day. And she goes, "Mom, guess what? I'm pregnant. So I'm going to be a grandmother." Yeah, the cat's not out of the bag yet. So that's a secret. So I guess she's about a month pregnant now. She's really excited, and so am I. You know, so I'm looking at this as a new opportunity to show up, you know, in a different way. You know, I was so preoccupied, you know, my first go around raising children with drinking. You know, today I get to show up as a mother and a grandmother. I'm pretty excited about that one. You know, my other daughter, Dawn, you know, we still struggle. I think she still holds a little bit of animosity towards me, although I've made several amends to her. She's a lot like me, and that's probably where the problem lies, I guess. She's my musician, and she's up and coming. She's got a couple songs that she just found out are going to be on some movies. So pretty cool. She's starting to make her way. Both of my girls live out in California, you know, and I think to myself, gosh, maybe if I'd been a better mother, you know, they wouldn't have moved so far away from me, you know, and I can spiral down in that. I remember sitting on the beach this summer, as a matter of fact, and I was sitting by myself, and I sat next to a woman who had, like, two grown children, you know, at college age, And I remember the daughter saying to the mother, oh, so-and-so is going to move where she's going to school. But I'd never do that, Mom, because I love you so much. Well, I started to cry. And I started to feel sorry for myself. And I started to use my tools. I said, God, please help me. Please get me out of this morbid reflection. Help me get out of this. And I started to pray, and I started to, thank him for getting my thoughts out of that. And who? Dawn. My daughter Dawn calls. And, we start talking, and she starts to tell me. I had just been out to California, and she starts to tell me that she felt as though I judged her. Oh, my gosh, really? Did I really? After just coming out of this cry, so I'm like, oh, boy. Dawn, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I want to let you know that I just love you. I love you so much, and that I'm going to make an effort to just show up in the way you need me to show up. So we both are on this path of calling each other more and really trying to have a communication with one another, which seems so difficult for us. I don't know why. And Daniel, my son, he's getting ready to propose to his girlfriend, and he lives out in Colorado. So all three of my kids, went out west. And I have some really great places to visit. And that's the way I have to look at it today, because I can really get caught up in the poor me's, with regards to, my children and the harms that I caused them. But my life is great today. I really, I love sponsoring women. I've got them at all different levels. I have some that tell me, it's not working out. And I, years ago I would have been like, whatever. Today I pray for them. I pray for them. I realize that sometimes people don't match up. It's just amazing how God works in our lives. I had a woman that just came out of rehab for a whole year. And God was telling me, I could feel God was telling me, no, this isn't you're not the one for this one. And I found her somebody who had the same story. And it was God working on her behalf for me. It's just amazing how God works in my life today. And, yeah, and I just wanted to read. The name of my group is the Great Fact, and I just love this because it just speaks to what happened to me. The Great Fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Yeah, my attitude has changed completely. When I first came into the program, I would look at this pie shape, and there was this little sliver, and that little sliver was God, and the rest of that pie was me. So my whole attitude changed from being self-centered, to God-centered. Didn't happen overnight. I fought it tooth and nail there for a while. My ego was so big. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He does it for me. I don't do it. I don't take the credit. There was no way I could stop drinking on my own power. There was no way in hell. I tried and tried, every which way. Moderation management, tried not drinking hard stuff, drinking beer, drinking only on the weekends. You know the gig. None of it worked. God did it for me. And God takes away my character defects. He gets me to see. He lets me to see where I need change. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us, which we could never do for ourselves. I look back on my middle-of-the-road sobriety, and I'm so grateful that God put the right people in my life, in my path. The sponsors that would love me enough to show me that I was full of garbage. I was full of crap, No. You're living a life of delusion. And thank God, I got to look in the mirror. There was a time when I couldn't even look in the mirror because I hated myself so much. You know, and today I can look in the mirror. You know, I'm God's beautiful daughter, and He loves me. You know, what a revelation that was for me. You know, I'm so grateful that I didn't go out, you know, continue, that I had the nerve to ask that sponsor that day, even though I knew my life was going to change, and I wasn't quite sure I was going to like it, that I had the courage to ask this woman to sponsor me and to find a way out that I never knew existed. You know, that first go-around in AA was farce for me. You know, I stayed dry for 4.5 years, really, is what it boiled down to. My life is beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I know God's going to, you know, put me in a position. I'm looking for a job right now. And I'm trusting my God. You know, I'm not frantic about it. I'm just trusting. We were talking about this at the diner before we came here. You know, I trust my God today, and He's gonna help me. Now that I'm going to be a grandmother, though, I don't know if I want a job. I have to go out to California when this baby's due. But, so I'm just so grateful that my life has made that 180-degree turnaround, you know. That little girl that lives inside of me, you know, that was so broken and so fearful and so afraid that nobody was going to like her, you know, she's still there, you know, but I get to love her, you know, and I get to show her, you know, a better way, you know, through God's help. You know, I get to help, you know, I get to show her that there's another way to be, you know, and I hope I gave you a good message tonight. You know, and if nobody's told you today, you know, I love you. God loves you. And, you know, seek Him. You know, He truly is, you know, the solution to our problems. He helps us to see what we need to see. We can't. He can. I'm definitely going to let Him. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.